for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The popular video series Grand Theft Auto is at the center of debate over violent video games. The Supreme Court has agreed to review a rejected California state law which would have blocked retailers from selling violent video games to minors. Joining me to talk about the issue, Cheryl Olson of the Center for Mental Health and Media at Harvard University Medical School, Richard Taylor of the Entertainment Software Association. Joining us by phone from Los Angeles is Eugene Volokh. He's professor of First Amendment law at UCLA Law School, and by phone from Ames, Iowa, Craig Anderson. He's distinguished professor of psychology at Iowa State University. We look forward to hearing your comments on this topic. As always, you add a great deal to the conversation. Call us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can join us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Before we begin our conversation with our guests here in the studio and around the country, we're joined by California State Senator Leland Yee. Good morning to you, sir.
Thank you very much for having me, Diane.
Senator Yee, talk about why you wrote this legislation.
Well, my background is that of child psychology, and when someone, one of my staff really, brought this issue to my attention, it brought back memories of Robert Sears' work at Stanford on observational learning. And but what I learned in graduate school was far different than what I saw with these ultra-violent video games, these interactive violent video games. There's two elements in there that I thought was particularly harmful to our children, and that is the interactive nature, the fact that when you push a button, literally you make a link to what that action, what the consequent action would be. And so when you push a button, you are hacking off someone's arm or limb, urinating on someone, degrading someone, burning someone. And so the connection is made, and when you do it hundreds of thousands of times, you really overlearn that behavior, and that behavior becomes part of your repertoire. I think that's point number two. And point number two is the fact that when you see all these pain cues, the crying, the yelling, pleading for help, and when you see that, and nevertheless you still go ahead and hurt those individuals, you become desensitized to those pain cues. You don't feel anymore. And as a result, what you find now is a technology that really helps our kid learn how to hurt individual and think that it's okay. This is the same technology that the armed forces use for our soldiers to go after the enemy, to hunt and kill them. Same technology that our public safety official used to in police academies and other places to go after the bad guys. And these are not lessons that I think we should be teaching our children.
Now, Senator Lee, I wonder whether you were surprised that the Supreme Court accepted the case, given the fact that last week they ruled on the sale of animal cruelty videos and said that they represented free speech.
I was pleasantly surprised, very, very pleasantly surprised. As you indicated, our bill, our law, had been rejected in lower courts twice. And the fact that the Supreme Court was going to take it up, I think, sent a very clear signal. I think the fact that the Supreme Court just recently rejected the animal cruelty video was also, and the fact that they were going to take up our bill is also sent us a very, very clear signal that the Supreme Court now is interested in looking at this matter rather closely. Because if they didn't, if they agree with the lower court, then they would not pick this issue up and want to hear it. There have been over 10 states in this country that have had some form or another of violent video games, prohibition of it one way or the other. What I think the Supreme Court is saying now is that because this is an important issue, there are many legislators who are interested in this area, and there is a duty, I think, to protect our children. Let's have a discussion, and let's have a presentation of all the facts, and let's see where we go from there. So I'm very, very hopeful. Again, the difference between our bill or our law and the animal cruelty is that ours is narrowly tailored, and it only focuses on these interactive, what we call ultra-violent video games.
All right, and finally, Senator Yee, do you believe there's a good chance that the Supreme Court will rule in support of this law?
Oh, most definitely. I think at the very least, the Supreme Court now is going to look at this particular matter, and they're going to rule and provide a pathway for all of us who are interested in this particular issue as to what would hold up to constitutional muster. So I think at the very least it'll do that. I'm hopeful that the U.S. Supreme Court will, in fact, affirm our law so that we can put that in place here in California.
California State Senator Leland Yee, he's also a child psychologist. Thank you so much for joining us. Indeed. And now, turning to you, Professor Anderson, I know that Senator Yee cited your research in his rationale for this ban. Tell us about the research you've actually done.
Well, the latest research, which just appeared last month in the American Psychological Association Journal Psychological Bulletin, is really a study of studies. It's a meta-analysis of basically all the studies that we could find involving the effects of playing violent video games on children, adolescents, and young adults. And so it looks at a huge number of studies, some conducted in the United States, some in various parts of Europe. We also got a large number of studies that were previously unavailable to us from Japan. And we use a technique called a meta-analysis, which is basically a statistical technique for combining the results of a variety of studies of sort of the same phenomenon. And using that technique, you can sort of ask the general question, gee, overall, what do the studies say about the effect of, you know, one variable on some other
Sure.
outcome? In this case, what are the effects of playing violent video games on things like physically aggressive behavior? What we found was that overall, we can now say with a lot of confidence that playing violent video games is a causal risk factor for increasing the likelihood of aggressive behavior, increasing the likelihood of aggressive cognitions or aggressive thinking.
If I could just ask you a question there.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a causal relationship between aggressive behavior and violence? Has that been proven?
Oh, yeah. The causal relationship between playing violent video games and aggressive behavior, it is definitely a causal relationship.
No, I'm asking whether you talked about aggressive behavior. I'm asking you about violent behavior.
Right. Well, The yes and no. What we mean in the social psychological literature and actually most of psychology, violence is seen really as the as a kind of physical aggression, the more extreme kind. And in some of the studies in this domain, some of the studies do include violent behavior. But on the other hand, you know, violent behavior is actually fairly rare, and typically requires more than one or two or even three risk factors to be present.
All right, Craig Anderson. He's Distinguished Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University. I wonder, Rick Taylor of the Entertainment Software Association, give us a sense of the kinds of video games that we're talking about here. I watched a bit of Grand Theft Auto this morning just to get a sense of what that's about. Tell me how popular these games are, who's playing them, and what you believe the effects to be.
Sure, thanks, and good morning.
Good morning.
Essentially, there's a broad range of games out there. The average video game player right now is 35 years old, which is worth remembering as we have this discussion, because in the same way, if you go to a multiplex theater, there's titles available for all ages and all tastes. Similarly, the computer and video game industry produces entertainment for all ages and all tastes.
However, one is active, one is passive. If you go to a movie theater, you're sitting there passively. If you're playing a video game, you're involved.
Well, there is an activity in the video game, which is one reason it's one of the fastest growing forms of entertainment. It's people enjoy that aspect of it. But to answer your question, you talked about a mature-rated title game in Grand Theft Auto. There are any number of other games that fall under that category, but the vast majority of games, 85% more of those sold, actually fall outside of the title for younger ages.
Richard Taylor, he's with the Entertainment Software Association. Short break. We'll be right back. And we're talking about the Supreme Court's decision to take on a California law which bans violent or the sale of violent video games to minors. So, Richard Taylor, let's talk about the current rating system for video games. And I presume that is designed to inform not only the person buying, but the parents as well, of what kind of video content is in this video.
They were precisely right. Parents are the primary partner and the person, where the ESRB, the Entertainment Software Rating Board, who does the ratings. That's who they are trying to provide a service to primarily. And it's similar to the motion picture rating system, which folks are very familiar with. It attempts to provide some advanced information about what one might encounter in a game, both through categories like E for everyone, E10, T for teen, and M for mature. And there are content descriptors to go with those, which provide even greater detail about what one might find in the game.
And there are adult-only markings as well.
There is a category called adults-only. It seems to be the realm of things that we as an industry and as association don't represent. But mature is the category, I believe, that Senator Yee is talking about, games that would fall into that category.
How popular is Grand Theft Auto?
Well, Grand Theft Auto is a very popular title, and it's very popular primarily because it's a fairly extraordinary game experience.
And how is that rated?
That is an M-rated game.
It is an M-rated game. Does that mean that if a young child, say of 10, takes Grand Theft Auto to the counter, that the clerk will say, sorry, you can't have this?
Precisely. Part of the overall rating system and the partnership, again, all voluntary, I should add, is that retailers who are our partners as well in this, at a point of purchase, when that is scanned into the register, the clerk will be cued to ask for identification and proof of purchase. What's interesting, Diane, is that 92% of the time games are purchased, a parent is present at the point of purchase. And that's a very telling statistic as well, because parents are engaged and interested in what their children are playing.
Now, taking on Grand Theft Auto again, does that 35-year adult mature individual, does that apply to that particular series?
That's precisely it. It is a adult-geared title. It's rated M, and it's and the content is primarily geared for older players. Now, each parent has to make a decision about what type of entertainment they want their child to play or not play. And that's why the content descriptors and the ratings are provided in advance, so they can make that. Plus, there's a host, obviously, of other resources online and elsewhere that we encourage parents to take full advantage of.
Richard Taylor, he's with the Entertainment Software Association. Cheryl Olson is co-director of the Center for Mental Health and Media at the Harvard Medical School. How do you view this connection between video games, which have violent content, and aggressive behavior on the part of young children?
This is an incredibly complex issue that's not soundbite friendly. But first, one of the things you seem to be trying to get at a moment ago is, are kids playing Grand Theft Auto games? And the research that I did, it was $1.5 million study funded by the Office of Justice Programs. We studied middle school kids. And among 13-year-old boys, a Grand Theft Auto game was listed as the most popular game they played. We asked, list five games you have played a lot in the last 6 months. And Grand Theft Auto, that series came up more than any other. Among the girls, it was second after Sims games. Now, on the one hand, you could say, oh, my Lord, what does this mean for our society? On the other hand, you could say, well, given that youth crime is down, violence is down, bullying is probably not up, the way they've measured that has changed. But what they must be meeting healthy needs for kids, developmental needs, or they wouldn't be doing it. So that gets off in a whole other direction. One of the things that that Craig Anderson mentioned that I'd like to address is that the issue of definitions is huge. And that's one reason that people get confused and have a lot of arguments in here. My training is in public health. I have a doctorate in health and behavior. So I'm going to naturally have a different approach than he does as a social psychologist. But aggression, you know, the average person, you think, well, aggression can be healthy self-assertion. Aggressive thoughts and feelings are different from behaviors. If you know, those of us who've had kids know that 3 a.m, you can think, I'd like to slap that kid, but you don't do it. And is having that thought mean I should be arrested for child abuse? And also sometimes when people study kids and say, oh, look, they're more aggressive after they saw that Ninja Turtles movie or played that game. If they're roughhousing around and, you know, being aggressive that way, that doesn't mean they're trying to hurt each other. And that's a huge distinction.
All right. Now, I want to, before we get into the nuances of those distinctions, I want to turn to Eugene Volokh, who is professor of First Amendment law at UCLA Law School. And I gather, Professor Volokh, that at the center of this discussion is the First Amendment right. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
And what do you believe the First Amendment right states as far as these violent videos are concerned?
Well, so that's a complicated question, in part because the Supreme Court hasn't given us a lot to work with in this area. The animal cruelty decision is actually not terribly helpful here. It was premised on the extreme breadth of that statute, the specific holding of that case is not going to be terribly relevant here. One thing that I do think the court is going to say is that video games generally are a medium that's protected by the First Amendment. just like theater is, just like books are, and the like. Obviously, it's a medium that was not known to the framers of the Constitution, just as movies were not, but I think the court will recognize that it's a medium for, among other things, telling stories, sometimes for sending political messages, artistic expression, and the like. Likewise, I think the court would have no trouble concluding that violent video games are, generally speaking, also constitutionally protected, just like novels and movies about violence. The really tough question here is to what extent will the court be willing to say, when it comes to communication of this material to minors, the government may essentially impose something like the movie rating system, although this would be legally binding as opposed to the movie rating system was just a very big cartel. The court has said in the past that when it comes to sexually themed material, including material that is constitutionally permissible as to adults, it is okay for the government to say, look, you can sell Hustler magazine, but you can't sell it to children. Especially the fact that there's an exception here for parents conveying material to their children suggests that this is kind of a way of increasing parental control at the expense, in some measure, of the right of the free speech rights of children. To what extent do children's free speech rights less than the rest of ours?
Tell me, if you will, Professor, what the history is of efforts to try to include violence as a kind of obscenity, as one would view sexually explicit material.
The history begins in the late 1800s, long before video games and long before movies, where the focus was on kind of pulp accounts of crime. And that was seen, I have no reason to think that we have an opinion one way or the other whether the view was correct or not, but that was seen at the time as degrading to the morals of children. Likewise, of course, sexually themed material was seen as degrading the morals of children and everybody else. That was very heavily restricted. But the communication of these accounts of violence, especially kind of in low-class forms, was also prohibited. It was prohibited in general, not just to children. That was eventually struck down in a case called Winters versus New York in 1948, relatively early in the history of the Supreme Court's enforcement of the First Amendment. And one reason the court gave there was that entertainment, including violent entertainment, is presumptively constitutionally protected. But the other reason is that the definition of what constituted impermissible depictions of violence and distinguished them from permissible, of course, much of Western literature, and actually literature of any nation, consists of descriptions of violence, that definition was unconstitutionally vague. And that's actually potentially a problem in this very statute as well. The field lay largely dormant for the next 50 or so years. The government continued, or state governments and the federal government continued to try to restrict communication of sexually themed experience, not really for violent material. And it was in the last few decades that the real regulatory push resumed. One problem, incidentally, for this law is precisely that this history is considerably smaller than the history of regulation of sexually themed material. One thing the animal cruelty case did say, and that the cases having to do with upholding restrictions on sexually themed material did say, is that there's this long-standing, deep and broad tradition in American history of restricting sexually themed speech, including to minors. And the courts were unwilling to entirely overturn that tradition. The tradition as to violent material, considerably narrower. So it may be that a court says, look, those cases are, that is to say, cases having to do with sex, are based in this tradition going back pretty much to the framing. In the absence of such a tradition, there's no warrant for carving out a new First Amendment exception.
Eugene Volokhis, professor of First Amendment Law at the UCLA Law School. If you'd like to join us, call us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Richard Taylor, the video game industry is arguing, I gather, that video games should not be singled out from movies, books, anything else. And yet there is this active versus passive question. When you're in a movie, you see what's violent on the screen. If your parents have allowed you to, if you're a young person, you walk out with a violent video game, you are involved. You are shooting because you have the opportunity to shoot and indeed kill and do all kinds of things. It's a very different situation. So in your mind, are there differences?
Well, I think Dr. Olson even touched on the idea that this elements of the interactivity that may actually indeed be a healthy aspect to the this entertainment form. But courts have ruled in similar attempts to pass these types of unconstitutional laws that the interactivity does not overwhelm the First Amendment protections afforded this form of expression. We strongly believe the constitutional protections afforded newspapers, books, film, music, apply also to the world of computer and video games.
And Cheryl Olson, you do not see that the active versus passive really makes a difference in the outcome of behavior.
And if the outcome we're concerned about is children attacking people in the real world, I don't think that it does. One of the things that comes up over and over with video games, it's like a zombie game, it will not die, is the idea of violent video games cause school shooting. Columbine, Paducah, kids learned how to shoot from playing violent games. And the FBI and Secret Service have done a lot of research into this. And first of all, there was no one that learned to shoot from a violent game. If you try to shoot someone you haven't practiced before, if they're standing still and you're pretty close, you have a bit of a recoil, but otherwise you can probably hit them anyway. And in the kids who they thought hadn't shot, in fact, had shot real weapons. So that's the biggest concern, is can you learn to shoot and kill from a game? The overlearning issue that Trey Anderson brought up, you know, the kind of desensitization, that's an important point because, you know, a lot of this we don't know a lot about, but you can overlearn something like how to react quickly when you see a novel stimulus on a screen. And that, in fact, may be good for your visual spatial skills. But does that translate to something in the real world? You're not shooting anything like a real gun. There is a concern that if you're constantly vigilant for threats, zombies leaping out at you, would you be more vigilant in the real world? Would you misinterpret a bump in a hallway at school as an aggressive act? It's possible. We don't know. I'm by no means saying, oh, don't worry about this.
Cheryl Olson, she's co-director of the Center for Mental Health and Media at the Harvard Medical School. You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Rich Taylor, you want to comment?
Just to follow up a bit on that, and Dr. Olson touched on it in her earlier comments about presumably these laws are being pursued because of some, you know, proven harmful impact, and if the elements they're looking for is violence, uptick in violence, the violent crime rates have been going down approximately the same over the same period that the computer video game industry has actually increased as a popular form of entertainment, roughly doubled. And at the same time, the crime rate has fallen some 9% over the past 10 years.
Craig Anderson, how do you comment on that?
Well, there are several things to comment on here. First of all, the national crime rate is totally irrelevant to whether or not any particular risk factor is a causal risk factor for violence. And any researcher who understands that violence, physical aggression, is in fact influenced by dozens of known causal risk factors, knows that you can't just look at national rates and relate them to changes in say the video game industry or anything else. I mean, that's just such a silly argument that I would get laughed out of any basic logic course. And no media violence researcher that I know has ever made the claim that, gosh, you know, national violence rates mirror exposure to media violence. Again, that's just out there, way out. Another point it has to do with, and I agree with Professor Olson that there is a difference between what's labeled physical aggression and what's labeled violence, with violence being essentially at the high end of what you might think of as a physical aggression continuum. On the other hand, the kinds of studies that have been done in this domain have included violent behavior, and aren't just a matter of boys being boys or rough housing, as very often industry people and some researchers like to maintain. So, for example, in one recent longitudinal study that controlled for how aggressive were the kids at the early point in time in this longitudinal study, showed that high violent video game exposure increased the likelihood of elementary school children being in a fight by the end of the school year, increased it by about 20%. Mm. Another study, you know, showed that in a short-term experimental study in which participants played either a violent or a nonviolent video game, in fact, these were children's violent games, right? These were games considered appropriate for children, showed that children were roughly 40% or gave roughly 40% more high-intensity punishments to an opponent than those who played a nonviolent game.
Craig Anderson, he's distinguished professor of psychology at Iowa State University. We'll take a short break and we'll have your calls, comments when we return.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the German Embassy and the German Information Center, whose Germany.info publishes news and politics, culture and lifestyle at Germany.info, by the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting efforts to find and fight the causes of homelessness, on the web at MelvilleTrust.org, and by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. This is NPR.
The April Reader's Review, a discussion of Outstealing Horses by Per Pedersen, the story of a widower who retires to a remote cabin in Norway and reflects on a life-altering summer 50 years earlier. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. As we talk about the sale of video games, violent video games, to minors, it's time to open the phones. We'll go now to Charlotte, North Carolina. Good morning, David. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Diane.
Hi there.
Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
I just wanted to say I'm 23 years old, and, you know, I've grown up with the video game industry. I've always kept up with it. And I'm very excited about the new advancements, the graphics, the entertainment aspect of it is very advanced, I believe. my comment is about my 9-year-old nephew, who has grown up in a completely different era of video gaming. I believe everything is pretty extreme as far as the violence and everything that goes on. I just wanted to say, video gaming is one of the things that we use to bond the most, but I've always made sure that you know, if I know we're playing, if I know he wants to play Grand Theft Auto or any other games like that, I don't allow him to. I believe that there should be, and not just a an age requirement when buying these games, but I believe that it should be taken a step further and maybe even requiring the sellers to make a statement, a quick statement about what the game entails as far as the violence aspect and how graphic it could be. Because I don't think that many of these parents or people of age that are buying these games for younger people have any idea how graphic, how violent, and how sexually graphic these video games are for these kids.
Thanks for calling, David Richard.
David, thanks very much for the comment. Just to be clear, the packaging for video games does include both the rating symbol and information, descriptor information on the greater detail about what one might find in the game, as well as, again, we encourage folks to utilize any number of other resources online. They sometimes get even greater levels of granularity about what one might encounter in the game. But we're all for more information, more informed parents, more informed consumers. I think it's a good thing.
One other question on that. Can a young child simply take an M-rated video to a counter, buy him or herself, and buy it?
Through most retailers across the country, that is nearly not going to happen. The FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, actually looked at all the various rating systems for the entertainment community, music, film, video games. They do this every couple of years. They do a mystery shopper as part of that, where they send folks in to see if they can buy games. The video game industry actually had the highest rate of enforcement at point of purchase at retail, was considered the leader among all those, both in terms of the visibility of the ratings, the information provided, and the efforts to limit marketing of violent games to younger folks. So our industry has really stepped up, and it's been verified not by us, but by a government agency.
All right. And let's go to Jacksonville, Florida. Good morning, Sam.
Morning, Diane. I just wanted to say I think this is preaching bogus science. Children can play these games at very young ages. I'm 35. I've been playing as violent of games and listening to as violent of music at age 12, 14 with my parents' consent. They very well knew what happened. What I was listening to, they objected, but they said, well, he's going to learn from this. It's not going to warp his mind if he realizes this is just a form of entertainment. And I went on and successful, practicing attorney. There's no problems. It's the problems with child violence are other systemic problems. It's not the video games. It has never been the video games, and it will never be the video games.
All right. Craig Anderson, do you want to comment?
Well, smokers for many, many years said, I've been smoking, and I don't feel any harmful effects. When you eat a bag of potato chips, you don't suddenly feel your arteries hardening and so on. So, the fact that one doesn't see or feel changes in oneself is not scientific evidence. And the scientific evidence is that, in fact, repeated exposure to violent media in general, TV, movies, and more recently video games, does lead to a measurable increase in a whole host of aggression and violence-related outcomes.
All right, Cheryl Olson, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I think one of the things we need to look at here is do children understand the difference between fantasy and reality? And desensitization, for example, from playing these games. If a kid plays a game over and over or sees a scary movie over and over, they probably will say, oh, that's silly, that's funny. They might even laugh at the over-the-topness of it. But if you see that same child, their friend gets hit by a car or injured on the sports field, they react very differently. And TV news, in the research that we did, we had kids and parents say, the news, it's fake. And parents saying, my son doesn't like to watch the news. He has bad dreams from that, but not from the video games.
And I would just say, I think we have to be very careful when we start using things like smoking as an analogy where there's a proven causal connection to many health ails, and the leap. It's a horse of a different color to do that with.
All right, to Indianapolis. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Hi. Actually, the last gentleman commented on what I was about to ask, and I was interested in knowing, it sounds like there's a causal relationship between violent video games and aggressive behavior, but has there been a significant amount of research to show what happens first? Is it the aggressive child, or is it the video games that actually cause the aggression? And is this a long-term effect, or is this something which could, you know, when a child is introduced to a video game, that, you know, they may be more aggressive or more harsh in judgment, but then, you know, a day or two later or whatever, the effect has passed.
Cheryl Olson.
Those are all great questions. First of all, I should say that we don't have evidence with a causal link between these games and real-world violence or aggression. In fact, my own research probably has the best evidence that we had a good sample of over 1,200 kids, and we found a link between increased fighting and bullying and playing mostly violent games or a lot of games, but that's a survey. You can't tell from a one-time survey, and you can't really tell even from a couple of surveys over a year or two. The other thing is, if you look at how kids develop over time, an aggressive child at one age may not be aggressive at another, and vice versa. So we have to look at the overall developmental course. And in terms of the short versus long-term effect from media, most of it does seem to be short. There's some studies that found increased in aggression from playing for 10 minutes and then 75 minutes of play, they were more relaxed and unwound.
Craig Anderson.
Well, Professor Olson's summary of the literature is unfortunately just wrong. There are longitudinal studies in the video game domain following up the same kids for a two-year period showing that, in fact, you see an increase in a relative increase in aggression and things like fighting at school and things like that. There are studies from multiple countries showing that now. Back to the original question, is it just a matter of more aggressive kids playing more violent games? The answer is no. It's the research shows that even kids who are more aggressive early on, if they play a lot of violent video games, they show a relative increase in aggression over time in these longitudinal studies.
And clearly we have two very different views on what the material shows, which I would gather the Supreme Court may have to take into account. Let's go to San Antonio, Texas. Good morning, Jonathan. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I had several comments, but most specifically, I'm sorry, Doctor, I'm not sure if I take great confidence in a longitudinal study that lasted 2 years. Is there anything more long-term that you could present?
Video game domain at the moment, the longest studies, longitudinal studies, are about 2 years in length, and there are several such studies. In the TV movie violence domain, there are studies showing long-term effects on violent behavior over a 22 to, I believe the latest is now a 30-year period.
So on movies, there's been a great deal more done. Violent video games, far less done. Cheryl Olson.
Right. That's absolutely true. And I should say, it's very hard to study these sorts of things in a longitudinal study because the media changed so quickly. And the TV studies that were done, they looked at games like Road Runner and The $6 Million Man as very violent games. Some of them didn't even ask kids what they played. They asked how many hours they played. And what they didn't look at is, were kids who spent a lot of time with TV doing that because they had nothing else to do? Was it a poverty of options, no adults around, no place to go, and the TV was a symptom rather than a cause?
Now, Richard...
That's not exactly true of those studies.
Disagree with what Cheryl has just said, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, those studies had lots of background information on those kids, and it wasn't just amount of TV, it was amount of time spent watching TV shows that had more violent content on them. I would agree with Professor Olson that this is a very complex area of research, and the idea, one of the most difficult problems to research is this idea with, are there differences between active things like video games, right? Is there evidence that playing violent video games has a more harmful effect than, say, the same amount of time spent watching violent television or violent movies. And, you know, that's a much more controversial area, in part because it's so hard to do that kind of research.
Yes.
There's a little bit of evidence on that, but that is not, you know, that is certainly not firmly established, whereas the other things, both the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Psychological Association have very explicitly come out and said these effects are real, they're causal, we need to think about how to deal with them.
All right, let's go to Elizabethtown, New York. Hi there, Carmen. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hi. My point is, with rights, there's responsibility. I'm a community mental health psychiatrist, and I think that if we're going to have, we should have a social standard, a mandatory government rating scale that says what's appropriate for adults and what's appropriate for children, and then there should be a responsibility of the consumer of those products that there would be consequences if they don't maintain that in an appropriate way. Just like you can buy a gun or alcohol, but you're not supposed to be giving it to your kids. You have to lock it up. And so why not have some responsibility on the consumer's part to maintain those things appropriately?
Thanks for calling, Carmen. Richard Taylor, suppose a fine were imposed on sellers, on retailers who sold violent video games to youngsters. What would that actually mean?
Well, let's take the example of the case that the Supreme Court is looking at. Right now, that would apply back a $1,000 fine for violations by retailers. But you know, there's a chilling effect that comes as a part of that, and that is that you can see how retailers would be reluctant to enter into that, to even carry product that would put them at risk, in part because of the vagaries of how this is defined. It doesn't say M-rated games. It talks about violent, ultra-violence. You heard Senator Yee earlier use these terms. Is a retailer to determine that? Who determines these? Which games fall into that category and which do not?
Richard Taylor of the Entertainment Software Association. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And now to Mishawaka, Indiana. Good morning, Court. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm the father of a 3-year-old son who's starting to show interest in video games, and I've been a video game enthusiast all my life. And I'd just like to say that, you know, there's a clear rating system, and most national retailers don't sell mature rated games to underage buyers, and I feel that not so much a national, like the last caller was talking about, but I think it should be put on the parents. I think they should regulate what their kids are playing and not allow them to purchase violent video games.
All right. Thanks for calling. Here's an email from Will in Tampa, Florida, who says, I believe there's a larger problem with video games in regard to education. Before, born in 1984, I grew up with generations of computer games and believe that video game addiction in kids has larger and longer-term consequences than the content of the games they play. I remember thinking how much better my grades would have been had I not spent so many hours each day playing computer and video games. Cheryl Olson.
There's an excellent point we made there, and that is I always tell parents, I think all of us can agree on this, get the game system, the computer out of the kids' bedroom. If you can't do that, use parental controls, confiscate the controllers at night, because kids don't have the self-control. Most of us as adults don't, to not check their cell phone, not to play something that's fun. And there's great evidence that the health effects of missed sleep are a big deal for kids and teens. And so for that reason alone, get it out of there. My research found that kids with systems in their bedrooms played more hours and played more mature-rated games.
Richard.
And I think it's worth noting some of the consoles which these games are played have parental controls built in, including timer controls. If a time play is an issue, you can set limits on how much a child can play. But I think Will mentioned education. I think it's a very interesting point. In the 60s and early 70s, there was this wasteland called television that folks were concerned about the impact they were having on the kids. Well, Joan Gans Cooney looked at that and said, well, let's use this to benefit and create a children's television workshop. Sesame Street came out of that, and we all know the great benefits that came from that. the same folks have now looked at this community of this technology and have put out a report called Game Changer and said, this is the best way to educate our kids. This is the way they want to engage, and they really do want to use interactivity as a means to help teach children. Even the president has embraced this through his science, technology, engineering, and mathematics push right now. The STEM program is utilizing computer and video games.
But the question before the court will be whether free speech and violent video games go together and go together compatibly. That's the issue. So I want to thank you all for joining us. Cheryl Olson of the Harvard Medical School, Richard Taylor of the Entertainment Software Association, Eugene Volokh of UCLA Law School, Craig Anderson, Distinguished Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University. Thanks to all of you. Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts.